Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACC Retirement Trust. Today, we're talking about leadership. What is good leadership and how does it manifest itself within the leadership team and the firm? This issue is increasingly important for engineering firms as the baby boom generation retires and new leaders are evolving. It's something you want to get right from the get-go. To offer some direction on how to do that, we welcome back to the program Mark Goodale, a principal at Morrissey Goodale. Mark recently presented a program for ACEC on effective leadership teams, and you can find that link in the show notes to this program. And we're going to go a little deeper into what he talked about during that program. Good to talk with you again, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. It's always great to be here. Appreciate it.
So before we get into the subject for the day, you talk with a lot of leaders in the industry. Have you seen a consensus on bringing people back into the office?
The exact opposite. It is all over the map. You've got some companies who fashion themselves as across the desk type people who want their folks back in as much as possible, and others are come as you wish. I would say it's variations of hybrids is probably about as much as you can coalesce around this topic. 2 to 3 days a week in the office, it's in that range. If that's probably where the critical mass is, at least from what we're seeing.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's I think that's what we're going to do when we go back to the office in January. So.
Yep.
So as you point out in your program, that the leaders in engineering firms tend to be engineers rather than business people. Now it would seem to me that you'd want your best engineers leading the way on projects, but when it comes to the business, you want your best business people leading the way. How does a firm balance those two?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The sort of the narrative of the industry is that these businesses are entrepreneurial endeavors, and they are started by people who are really at least as much business people as they are engineers, whether they know it or not, whether they've had formal education or not. They have a leaning toward business. And so it's sort of like, you know, they're business people who happen to be engineers versus engineers who happen to find themselves in business. And they're a fairly rare breed. And with engineers, it's not really even what they do, it's who they are. And so when these businesses get started, these business people tend to surround themselves with folks who can get the work done, who can process. And as the firm grows, there's not necessarily much attention given to developing leadership skill sets or behavior sets, I guess I would call them, things that are fundamental and available to every firm if there's focus on it. And that is being able to make grounded assessments and sound decisions and take care of yourself while taking care of others. It's sort of, these fundamental, being able to work on the right problems. We're great problem solvers, but not necessarily great problem finders. So, and we tend to jump to conclusions, and that ends up taking us down the wrong path. So there's these sort of basic fundamentals that are necessary to be able to take care of the concerns of the firm. And the concerns of the firm are, namely, that we use our resources, be they human or financial, sustainably, that we're able to deliver value to our clients and a great experience to our clients, and that we're making enough money to pay ourselves today and invest in the firm for tomorrow. You can add a fourth and save the world if you like, but the three that are usually keeping people up at night, the business folks, are the making sure we're using our resources, keeping our clients happy, and making money. And lots of times what we see in firms are folks that zero in on their part of the business. And so it's this sort of I've got mine mentality, and they work in the business and not on it. So that's how this kind of this dynamic has been created over time. I'm simplifying it, obviously, but it's one of the big reasons why you see so much consolidation in the industry today, is because it's not so much the ownership transition, you know, the sort of transactional part of it that's failing. It's the leadership transition that's failing. And those two things go hand in hand. They're a package deal. So we're seeing quite a bit of consolidation, largely because of that, and lots of other pandemic and so forth. But it's been that way. That trend has been happening well before the pandemic hit.
So that speaks to a dearth of leaders.
It does to a degree. I mean, you know, engineers didn't go to school to say, "Hey, boy, I can't wait to get knee deep into an HR issue and go pound on doors and sell work." You know, they're going there to solve problems, follow the science, you know, follow the math, get the result. And in business, it's a lot different. When you're building a business and you're dealing with people, it's all cognitive learning. It's all trial and error. And what happens in the schools is that it's all curriculum driven. There's not a lot of thinking for yourself in terms of what you're going to learn. So engineers have a hard time sometimes taking responsibility for what they're going to learn outside of their curriculum. And even post formal education, it's all sort of check the box kind of stuff. And so bringing the outside world in is very important. I would say there's leadership capabilities in people, but it does need to be brought out in the organizations. If you're not developing that pipeline of people, those behavior sets, if you will, you end up getting stuck. So it's there. It's just that the focus isn't necessarily on it. And people love working on that, you know, in that work, and not necessarily on the business. The golden goose isn't the sexiest thing to work on. It's the projects, and it's not the golden goose that's laying all those golden eggs. But and the other thing, Jerry, is that to take on that leadership role, engineers have to let go of things. They have to let go of, they have to share their knowledge and their network freely and give that value away, which can be very scary. That's how they've valued themselves and how the companies valued them. But developing people and leading an organization, entirely different skill set, entirely different career. And so leaving the doing to go to the leading can be intimidating for some. They've got to figure out their highest and best use again and sort of redefine themselves. And that said, they couldn't be more valuable to the firm when they do that kind of thing.
In your program, one of the things that I found most interesting was your pyramid of what a good leadership has. And at the base of the pyramid, you had trust, which was among the leadership and in the team in general. But to my mind, trust doesn't work its way from the bottom up. It works its way from the bottom down. If the CEO and the leadership team don't trust, then no one in the organization will trust. But you say, you make the point that trust is something that you can create.
Yeah, you know, and credit to Patrick Lencioni from his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, where that pyramid is derived. And you know, that organizational health can be created. And it's, you know, trust is the bedrock of that. And it's not so much that I trust you're going to show up and do good work, or I can trust that you're going to do the right thing when you're on your own. It's trust that I can feel vulnerable in front of a group. I can ask the silly question. I can come up with the wacky idea. I can even tell the emperor that the emperor is wearing no clothes. So it's this sort of idea that we can speak our minds without fear of some sort of attitude, retribution, isolation, being marginalized, et cetera. And when you're able to do that, when you're able to have that kind of environment, you can get into healthy dialogue and you can challenge each other. And it's not just a whole bunch of yes people. And so it takes practice like anything else. It's nice to say that you could have that environment overnight, but it requires practice, and it requires a leader or leadership to invite that kind of dialogue and to reward that kind of dialogue publicly and in real time, and to be vulnerable themselves, to your point. I worked with an ENR top 500 firm in the Midwest many years ago. And I remember being really struck by the amount of trust that was in that organization. And there was some family members in there too. So you could see that, you know, nepotism really could have taken hold there. And it was interesting because it was a husband, wife were at executive levels. In fact, the husband was the CEO, the wife had an executive role, and the way they spoke to each other and the wife was challenging the husband in this case in a meeting that I was observing. And I had no idea they were married by the way they were conversing, and everybody was there, and the CEO was saying, you know, I take responsibility for that. I need some help with this. I'm kind of struggling on this one. And I thought, wow, what a great show of vulnerability to admit that the CEO needs help. And how do you think that cascades down throughout the rest of the organization? If the head person in the organization can say, hey, I failed, I need some help, anybody can say it now. It was a powerful moment that I observed, and it kind of shaped my thoughts going forward about that topic in particular, trust in particular.
It's interesting because so many people in high leadership positions would feel that they have a need to at least put forward to project perfection or competence or some sort of not needing help, rather than, as you point out, it's actually the opposite.
Yeah, it is the opposite. And you can pretend all you like. We all know there's no such thing as perfection in us mortals. So you're not fooling anybody. Anybody who's halfway on the ball is going to see that, and they're going to tighten up and play the same game. And you just don't get the best assessments that way. You don't get the best strategic decisions that way. You don't build strong business relationships internally and externally that way. And it's not talking and not listening are probably the two biggest wastes in the organizations that I work with. And it's something that is so important to work on. And it really does separate the good companies from the great ones.
You also make a point, which I liked, which was that you're not going to get 100% consensus, but you can get buy-in. What are some of your suggestions on how to do that?
Yeah, so consensus means that you get 100% agreement. And there's too many smart people at leadership tables and too many opinions to get 100% agreement on just about anything. Buy-in means, let's say we're going to establish a vision for a firm and it's not quite exactly what you had in mind, wasn't worded quite exactly the way you wanted it. Everybody becomes 12th grade English teachers, by the way, when it comes to crafting missions and visions, but that's it's a rant for another day. But it means that you were listened to, not just heard, but listened to. I can buy in. Rational people, if there is such a thing as a rational person, they don't need to get everything that they say that they want to buy in, but they do need to be listened to. And again, it gets back to trust. If you're having your best conversations in pairs outside of the meeting room saying, yes, I was nodding up and down, yes, but I'm not following that. There's no way I'm going along with that. It's corrosive. So it's important that to get buy-in, you need that healthy and open dialogue. You need to say what needs to be said. And then you can self-select. If it's really, you know, if you just can't align with it, you can self-select. But especially when you're working on strategy and making strategic decisions, you can't agree to disagree. You can't have your nine principles going in nine different directions if you have any intention of being one successful organization, and it's not I've got mine. So critical to buy-in is that open and healthy dialogue. And that, Jerry, takes practice as well. I can say, hey, that's, you know, that's what you need. It doesn't mean you're going to be good at it. It takes practice like anything else. And it's not hard. It's not easy. It's just you're either practiced or you're not. You know, you can bake a pie once a year. It's hard to do. You bake a pie once a day. It gets pretty easy to do. Well, maybe not for me, but for most people, that would be the case. So I would say open and healthy dialogue is the key to gaining that buy-in. And it's a chain reaction, right? Once you get that buy-in, you can hold people accountable. It's tough to hold people accountable when they never bought in the first place. And that's another big issue in the industry is accountability. We're generally nice people. We're not butt kickers in general. We're not cutting off the 10 least productive folks in our company every year, like some industries do. So we need to rely on clear expectations and buy-in to get folks focused. And, you know, ultimately you want people who are pulling on the rope together. Clearly we all have our own personal agendas, and we can share those and we can acknowledge them. And as long as they don't drown out the cries of the team, we should be okay. But again, it gets back to that trust and the open and healthy dialogue, and everything flows from there.
One thing we've seen in our industry is, and in other industries really, is that financial people, business people that have taken over the C-suites, that, you know, that doesn't always work out because they have one, their goal is financial success, profit, which, and they can lose sight of the engineering expertise that originally built the company. An example that I think of is Boeing with the 737 MAX, which, you know, the financial people said this is great, but in the end it wasn't. What are your thoughts about bringing in business people from outside the industry to run these companies?
You know, there's risk with that for sure. But I like the idea of bringing the outside world in. The industry by and large is quite provincial, and engineers in general have a tough time learning from anybody outside of their discipline. So we don't corner the market on best practices by any stretch. And so when we bring business folks in, it's got to be folks who are purpose driven and who are really into the mission of the company, the purpose of the company. And that has to be in alignment. And when it is, it works out very well. Trust needs to be built and so forth. And there's an education process. But I have seen plenty of examples of organizations that have folks who have been CFOs and that kind of thing take over as president. Sometimes they're in a different role within the company before they become president, so they can get into the culture a bit. But I know a number of financial folks who are at the heads of very successful larger firms in the industry. I'm thinking of one in the Northeast in particular, a 500 person firm, infrastructure firm in the Northeast that's led by a CFO. And boy, that company is run really, really well. There's a sensitivity to the culture and the purpose of the organization, and the engineering as being the core of what the firm does. Now, you know, that we're evolving here as well. You're starting to see technology. Folks who are have a technology expertise playing a larger and larger roles in leadership in the industry. And we could see, Jerry, over time, I really think there's going to be I know I'm going off the path here a little bit, but I can see a time where, and this just speaks to non-engineers leading companies, and it could be in different directions. It could be financial, it could be technology. I see that over time, I believe you're going to see a dichotomy that there are going to be some engineering firms that become more technology-driven firms that have engineers in them and are run to some degree by engineers or totally. And then there are engineering firms that happen to feature some technology. And I think more technology leaders who are purpose-driven and into making the world a better place. I mean, the engineering industry makes the world a better place. It's an unsung industry in a lot of ways. But I see it evolving, and I see the influence of financial people, and I see the influence of folks who have a technology bent shaping the direction of at least a portion of the industry. Some of the more progressive firms, I think, are going to move in that direction. They already are. You can look at the acquisitions that are being made of technology firms and technology leaders.
Yeah, technology is just moving so fast. It's astounding how, I mean, just in the past 2 years with through COVID, the way the industry has adapted technologies to work has been amazing.
Yeah, that genie's out of the bottle now and not going back in anytime soon. It's proven now that we can do work remotely, and it's going to be a tough case to get people back in full time. But that's talk about a disruptor, and COVID just accelerated it.
You know, you mentioned earlier that the engineers are nice guys, and I'll go along with that. And you had a story that you told about a firm where they required as an exercise to provide negative feedback to each other, and that the unanimity among the leadership at the firm was that they preferred receiving negative feedback rather than giving it. So that's only one side of the coin. How do you get both sides of the coin?
Well, it's again, it's a practice thing, and you need to create forums for where that happens. People have to practice and get used to the idea that you can be helpful giving negative feedback. And it starts with accepting in yourself and others that you are well-intentioned or well-intended, and that you wouldn't be giving this feedback if it weren't for wanting somebody to improve. And so I found it very interesting. I was surprised as anybody when I began to do this exercise and learned over and over and over again with many different firms that, and it was really kind of a 10 out of 10 situation. It wasn't sort of 80-20, even 90-10. It was every person. I don't think I've heard a person say it was tougher for me to receive the feedback than it was to give it. It was always tougher to give. And you could see the body language when we did this, and people would have to stand face to face, and the hands are in the pocket and the eyes are down at the shoes. And when it came to really giving feedback that they thought would be helpful, but it was essentially a negative assessment. And so it does take practice to give it and receive it. Lots of people receive feedback, and engineers, you know this, Jerry, they're born to make cases. It's sort of like attorneys in a way. They make cases. Engineers make cases. And when they receive feedback, that feedback is usually in the form of an assessment, more often than not. It's not factual, it's opinion-based. And it could be grounded or it could be ungrounded. But the way the engineers usually take that is, it's negative, it's about me, it's got to be true. So I'm going to actually try to make a case as to why it's false. And so that's how these arguments happen. You know, that's an ugly shirt. Well, you may think that, but I know my audience and they actually like this shirt. Rather than saying, that's an interesting assessment, I didn't ask you to make it, but I'm interested in why you think that. And it's just not the natural way, because that's not what has been practiced. And so it does take practice, but there are once you learn that you can give this feedback and people will take it that way versus being defensive about it, and they'll take it for in the spirit that it's given, it gets easier to give it. It gets easier to receive it too when you start to realize that these people would rather be doing 1,000 other things than giving you that negative feedback, but they think enough of you to give it to you. We all have blind spots, and we do ourselves a disservice when we don't point those out to each other. But like you say, we're nice people. We'd rather stay in, you know, this false harmony. It's easier. It's the path of least resistance. It's human nature to a degree, but it's not in the best interest of the firm or even the people in the firm. I've seen situations where folks have been let go after 6 months, and they've been given this feedback once they've been let go. Well, we didn't get this, that, and the other from you. And it's, well, why didn't you say something? Maybe I could have changed it. No, we'd rather just have you walk off the cliff than, you know, tell you that you're approaching. And that's easier for us. And so it's interesting, and it just takes practice. And you look at at different, even different parts of the country, and it can be difficult where, you know, you look to the South where manners are very important, and you know, they wouldn't dream of saying, you know, some of the things that really ought to be said. In the Northeast, we're all just kind of cranky. It must be the weather or something. I don't know, but it's a little easier for us. In the Midwest, they're super nice. So it regionally too, it actually, I've seen it play out a little bit in a way. It's kind of funny that way. But overall, you know, these folks are well-intended people. They observe very well, and they really owe it to each other to coach each other and to point those things out. It makes for a much healthier situation in the long run.
I like what you said about that, to recognize that this person cares enough about your progress that they will suffer that discomfort to tell you a negative assessment.
I get the most worried when I stop getting assessments. Then I feel that I've been, it's a hopeless case, and I'm in a bad situation. So I'd rather be getting that feedback. And you think about it, Jerry, the elite athletes seek that stuff out. You know, is there a hitch in my swing? Am I opening up my hips too quick? Whatever the sport is, they seek it out. They don't necessarily want to hear it. They may be sensitive too, but they seize on that and they see it as an opportunity to improve. There's nobody who gets to an elite level in athletics who hasn't gotten negative assessments and improved because of it. No, none of them.
That's a great point. Yeah. Finally, in your experience, when you've encountered successful leadership teams in engineering firms, are there common characteristics among them?
Yeah, I would say they listen really well to each other. And sometimes engineers will think they're good listeners because they don't interrupt people. That's mainly because they're fairly introverted, and there's a lot of internal monologuing going on. There's not a lot of external discussion. So while they think they're good listeners because they're not interrupting, rule number one of listening is you can't be listening if you're speaking, they check that box. There's other boxes to consider though, and one of the largest is, are you arguing mentally? And that means agreeing or disagreeing mentally. So I say something, the person who's listening is agreeing, and that makes sense, or that's a little bit weird, or that's really wacky. And that's what the inner monologue sounds like when you're arguing mentally and you're looking for agreement in what people are saying versus fully comprehending what they're saying and putting all of their energy into understanding. And when you do that, you end up asking good questions from a place of curiosity, very simply, why do you say that? What do you mean by that? Go on with that. They're encouraging the speaker to go on and explain. And it's amazing what you learn when you do that, when you originally thought you, quote, knew it all. And rather than making cases, you're listening and listening for agreement. You're listening for total understanding. And once you've agreed or disagreed, there's no reason for the speaker to go on. But in healthy leadership organizations, they consider listening the master skill, and they practice at it, and they really are expert at it. And once you start to observe that and practice it and be aware of those filters, it's easy to see in organizations. It just stands out.
And I would imagine that also gives, as you were saying, it opens up dialogue that is constructive, and
it's all interconnected.
Well, great. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
I appreciate being invited, Jerry. Always a pleasure.
Okay. And you've been listening to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by ACEC and sponsored by the ACEC Retirement Trust. Thanks for listening.